This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3167 for Tuesday, the 22nd of September 2020. Today's show is entitled A Ramble with the Pentland Squires, Part 1. It is hosted by Dave Morris and is about 42 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is MRX and Dave Morris chat from opposite sides of the Pentland Hills. Edinburgh.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hi everybody, welcome to Hacker Public Radio. This is Dave Morris with Mr. X, and we're doing another one of our chit-chats over Mumble. I think we're sort of either side of the Pentland Hills sort of thing, are we? Are we, Mr. X? I'm in an area called Curry, which is one side of the Pentland Hills. You can scramble up the hills from here relatively easily. And you're a fair way away the other side of it all, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. I'm probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 miles south of Edinburgh, something like that. You know, that's the general area, basically.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody's interested in exactly where we are, but I like to think of the geography of these things. So we've got a list of things that we've been sort of kicking around as worth having a little chat about, because otherwise we'd be sitting here twiddling our thumbs. Probably I would anyway, have a list. So we can sort of leap into them if you're happy.
Yeah, well, whether we take maybe one from each, so you know, because you've got a few and stuff like
that. Yeah. I don't want to blitz through my whole lot, because I can't leave a document alone. I have to keep adding bits to it all the time. So, yeah.
Yeah, it seemed you said it first. Oh, I never come up with ideas sort of things. And I was struggling through all the rest of it. And then your list appeared. Oh, it's quite a lot of things. Yeah, that's quite good. That's excellent.
It's amazing. When you get started, it's difficult to stop sometimes. So, yeah. Well, my first item on the list was just to talk briefly about the situation regarding COVID-19, this coronavirus, in the UK. I think it's a pretty well-worn topic, and I sort of detect some people getting a little bit bored with it. Personally, I find it quite fascinating how it all works and what people are doing. But as far as Scotland's concerned, the schools returned on the 11th of August. Today is what, the 23rd, is it? Yeah. And Scotland doesn't seem to have had a vast number of cases. It certainly had them, but there's a thing you can look at on the web, which has been set up by the Scottish government, where you can see how many cases there have been in your area. And the number is very small in the area I'm in. I imagine there's maybe more in, I haven't scanned the whole lot, but some places are worse than others. But we seem to be reasonably okay as far as the virus is concerned. That's not to say we should be complacent, because it's not gone away, it's still out there. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm just looking at a website that I've actually never looked at it on a PC browser before. I've just looked at it on the tablet, which I'm using here just now. And what would I say about it? So there's a great website called, like, I think it pulls the data from the Scottish website and also from the UK website as well. I think he started with Scotland, but now I think he said actually that he had requests. So the website is called Scotland Coronavirus Tracker. Actually, sort of Google for Traveling Tabby, I think that's it goes by, and he's into stats and whatnot, and it's just a slew of information it's phenomenal. And so you got the quest to cover the UK, but I think should we say that it was so inconsistent for a while that he found it impossible to understand the data, so he couldn't put it up. But now that it's obviously solidified a bit, he's been able to do that. So he's also got the UK in there as well. And it breaks it all down in a whole mirage of data model. I think you find it quite interesting, Dave.
Yeah. It's there is a website that Dave Lee pointed me to from the podcast and various other podcasts that he's been using, where you can make just one line of curl requests of it and get back a big wad of CSV data. So I've been looking at that a little bit, but and I think that just shows daily numbers of cases and that type of thing. So there's tons of information, maybe not as much as there could be, but there's still some quite useful stuff if you're into making diagrams or whatever you want to do with it. It's interesting. So shall we draw a veil over that one? You've got anything else you wanted to add to it?
Sorry, Dave, I was trying to think. Oh, this tablet just fell off a stand.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to get the website. I don't know. I wonder if I can still speak while I'll just go just see if I can get the website now. If I can paste it in. So how do I do copy? How do I copy a website? Is it share? Is that how you do it? Oh, I don't know. Android, mm-hmm. I don't know how you do it. No, don't know how to do this. I should, if I've been using the desktop there, I just copied the URL, and it's travellingtabby.com. Well, I'm travellingtabby.com. That's the website. It's probably more hassle than trying to get that to paste into the.
We can maybe add it to the notes. Anybody's interested?
Yeah, of course, yeah, of course, that's right. Yes. Because of course, the thing is that we were supposed to be. Let's go back to your notes here. We're supposed to be going on holiday this weekend with some relatives, and they live down in the Manchester area, and you know, they've been everyone obviously everyone's got their own way of looking at this and. Is balancing risks and whatnot, and as you say, I think a lot of people are getting fed up with it all. I find it interesting as well that the fact has been so much so that I haven't been I've been you know, getting way behind with on HPR stuff. So we were supposed to go on holiday, and we generally go to the Lake District about this time, but obviously that's a bit of a hotspot, I think, really. So we kind of made the decision not to, and of course we've been getting updates on how wonderful things have been. So it's just been a bit kind of, you know.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? It really is. I as things started to ease off here, I have a membership with Edinburgh Zoo, and I like to go there something like once a week if I possibly can. It's good to look around, and it's also good exercise to walk around there. And so when they started opening up again last month, I decided I'd maybe start going back again. But I don't know, I found myself suddenly, I did a couple of weeks, and then I found myself feeling really uncomfortable about the way people are out looking at animals and stuff. And they don't pay without masks, of course. That's the people, I mean, rather than the animals. They don't pay a lot of attention to proximity. And, you know, whether they're carried away with the delight of looking at the animals, I don't know. But, you know, I got a little bit nervous about it, to be honest, and stopped going for the while.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I don't know. People, I don't know whether a lot of people, they just listen to the news. And if it sounds to them like it's safe, then it's safe enough, off they go and they just do their thing, and then they just forget about the basics. You know, I keep saying I've said to my mother before, you know, it's not what some a kind of, I'll say this, it's not what some silly law says, it doesn't matter what the law says, it's whether it's safe or not. That's really what it boils down to.
Yeah, yeah, you know? That is very true. It's, I keep saying to anybody who listen, that nothing's really changed. All that's happened is that rather than everybody in the country who could catch it, catching it and then swamping the hospitals, we've controlled it so that it hasn't penetrated as rapidly. But that doesn't mean that if you go and expose yourself to it or get exposed, that you won't catch it. And, you know, and we could be seeing peaks coming back again, especially with the kids at school. That's a concept that bothers me because, the kids can catch it. They don't. They're more or less symptomless in the vast majority of cases, but they shed it. They shed the virus. So if kids go to school, there's no means of telling if there's the virus in the school because there's no testing to see if anybody in the class has got it. Then they come back home and then can give it to the parents and the grandparents and whatever, you know. It doesn't seem very well managed at all.
No, I agree. But I think really what it boils down to is it's to protect, it's not to protect the individual, it's to protect society. That's the way I read it. Because, you know, for example, you can bubble and bubble to different groups of people and whatnot. So you can have one household. I don't really know all the rules and regulations, but you can have one household speaking to another household. My mother was talking about this. And I said, yeah, well, that's fine. I said, but what is that other household doing? It could be, the household you're bubbling with could be a person who sticks to themselves, doesn't do very much, stays in and is careful. But likewise, you could be bubbling with somebody who deals with huge numbers of the public and is not at all careful. That's not the same risk. Now, okay, it means that it's not going to spread very far because you're bubbling, that's as far as it will go, but you'll still catch it. You know, it's to protect society and not protect the individual necessarily. You know, that's what I think.
Yeah. That's right. The whole mask business is not to protect you. Is to protect the people that you come in contact with should you have the virus, you know. So but and that would apply to children, and being, you can guarantee that kids are not going to be wearing masks to and from and when they get home and whatever, you know. So it doesn't really work. I don't know what the consequences are going to be. I think America seems to be a little bit more cautious than the UK has been in relation to schools opening.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I was listening to the teacher talking. He was saying that what was it? He said he was a bit annoyed about it. This, and this was probably down in England, I think. But it's probably the same in Scotland, to be fair. And something along the lines of, now he was talking about wearing masks. He wanted to protect the students from him, and he wanted to wear a mask, but he wasn't actually prohibited. He wasn't actually allowed to wear a mask. He was actually the rules stated that he couldn't wear a mask, even though he wanted to protect him. He wasn't allowed to, which is absurd, you know. It's insane.
It's really mad. There's not really been much in the way of clear guidance as to what the reasons for wearing masks are and what the consequences of not. Yeah, just the sort of just bare mechanics of how this works, you know, because the virus is spread through airborne droplets that come out of people's mouths mostly and noses, you know.
Yeah, and it depends how the volume, I've heard about that just recently, the volume makes a big difference as well. And here's some interesting research, and you may have heard this one, Dave. So new research from the Edinburgh School of Engineering has shown that if someone is coughing or talking, wearing a mask, then there is 10,000 times less droplet transmissions to 2 meters away. It's actually better to be half a meter away from the person wearing a mask than 2 meters away if they are not wearing a mask. That just puts it into perspective.
Yeah. But that's sort of stuff that should be on billboards, and it should be on the news, and it should be on the television, it should be on the radio, it should be everywhere. Those sorts of that type of information, those sorts of messages should be very clear everywhere. And there's some countries that have done this and done it very well, but for some reason or other, the UK doesn't want to play this game at all.
No, I do find it really frustrating, you know, because even with other kind of family members and stuff, I think, you know, it's not that difficult. That's what I keep saying. It's It's not difficult, you know. You just think if it's a public place, you know, you make sure you stay 2 meters from everybody. If the surfaces that you think a lot of people have been touching, then you know if you do touch them, that's fine. But before you should sanitize your hands before you go anywhere near your eyes, your nose, whatever, you know. Absolutely. That's the thing all going about yourself. It's just common sense.
Yep. I know. Oh boy. Let's move on, shall we? Do you want to have a? Let me pick something off your list.
Yeah. Okay. So what was? I just think that's my list. Number one. What was it? General. Oh, and I'll tell you what. No, it doesn't matter. We'll stick with the list. General discussion about submitting show notes to HPR, remark down, and how to minimise today's workload, and what are most common pitfalls. That was my first one.
Yeah. I think we probably get sort of three or four different types of show notes. We get people who've gone to the trouble to make HTML. Sometimes it's handcrafted HTML and they sort of lose themselves a bit, because I personally hate writing HTML, and it's so easy to close a thing prematurely or put the closing part of a tag in the wrong place, and you do see that quite often. So those can be great if they're nice clean HTML, but otherwise they're not. I run them through an HTML checker, which flags up all of those sorts of things, and then I edit them to repair whatever. And also we're currently producing a report that goes back to the sender. So that's the sort of first class. Second class is we get Markdown, which people are building up a lot more experience with Markdown now, because it's available in all sorts of contexts. If you use Git and GitLab and stuff, then Markdown is what you use to write readmes and documentation and add stuff to the wiki or whatever it is you're doing. So Markdown, it's not the best way of typing text, admittedly, but it's not bad for what it is. So people have got reasonably knowledgeable about it. So we get some quite good quality Markdown coming in. So that's often the least difficult stuff. Go on.
Yeah. Okay. So I just gonna say, generally I tend to just submit things as plain text, because I think, well, there's less likelihood of it to cause any problems. So if I can stick to plain text, I do that. HTML. I mean, I think I have done a wee bit of HTML way back, but as you say, it's so easy to make not to close something off or something. So
yeah.
I tend not to. But Markdown is a new thing I've started. You probably know there's been one or two, maybe I can't remember, just one or two shows that I've submitted the Markdown. Maybe it was just one actually. And the first thing was that when I submitted the show, it mentioned, like you say, what type of Markdown, and this is the problem because there's no complete standard. So there was, as you say, there was Git or something, and there was something else, and I didn't understand which one to pick, so I just randomly picked one.
Mm-hmm.
Now the other thing is that
I think the default. Am I right in saying this? At least the one at the top of the list is pan.markdown, which is Markdown with quite a lot of extras added to it. And I think a lot of people prefer that, just judging by what you see out there these days. But GitHub one is second in popularity.
Now, you mentioned, so what I was saying, I had a discussion with Dave about this, because it was something initially, I think, when I was submitting shows, and I was saying, you know, could HPR point to, because if it's somebody else, I can maybe there's a problem with doing that, but I was saying, is there a site that you could say, well, by the way, if you want to check your map, then you could go to this site or whatever, and you mentioned a couple of places, and you also mentioned an application, which I think you can also get for Android, so it works on Android, it works on Linux, I'm sure it works on all the platforms really. I can't remember what it was called now. And I tried it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Retext.
Yeah. That site now. Okay, I'm just opening it up just now, and it looked a little basic maybe, but it was really good. It was fine. So of course, when I created my document with the retest, I didn't know which Markdown to pick. But there was, oh, I think I had bold, and that was about the only sort of things I had in it. But you know, if you had, would it be possible to have, I don't know, to mention retext in when you're applying for show notes or something, or a link to somewhere else where people could check, and then and also tell them which one to pick that best matches, because that'd be my, because I don't know anything about Markdown type two. That's what we're saying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, that's a great idea. We have agreed, Ken and I, that the documentation on the site needs some work, and I've been putting together a frequently asked questions list. It had a rapid start and then it sort of stopped for a bit due to other things, but I think what I like to do would be to have sort of sections in there that point to the larger documents about these sorts of things, and that'd certainly be something to put in there. You know, I want to do Markdown, which one should I choose, and how can I simplify Markdown, and those sorts of things. I think that would be a great question to add to it. So yeah, I'll put something in there. We will add something about that to the notes.
Excellent. Good stuff. Yeah, that's smashing.
I wanted to say that the third type of input that we get is plain text, which is pretty common. And because plain text and Markdown are pretty similar, I just simply take that plain text and turn it into Markdown. And I've got a few scripts I've written that will help with that. You know, I can select a URL and it will turn, and then click this thing in Vim, and it will change it to the way that Markdown likes to do links, do pictures and that sort of stuff as well. So just to save me some typing, that's all. But so that's a fairly common thing. It'd be nice if it was Markdown to start with, but it can cope otherwise.
That's interesting. Maybe other people thought the same thing, that the simplest thing for you to deal with would be text, but it actually turns out that Markdown is probably, as long as you pick one that's recognised, it's probably the simplest one to deal with, because I could submit all my shows in Markdown. That's not an issue, actually. That's good to know that, actually.
Yeah, we should be clearer about this, shouldn't we? And we do take different flavours of Markdown, because this was a thing that Ken and I discussed. I use Pandoc behind the scenes to turn the Markdown into HTML. And Markdown will handle many different types of input, not just Markdown, it will handle other things as well. So whatever you select in that pull-down list gets passed through to Pandoc, and it just processes it accordingly. So we have had one or two instances of things like, what was it? Restructured text, I think somebody sent in at one time, which worked fine. Yeah, there was a big problem with it. So that's the idea.
So Pandoc, I think I'm sure Clatty did a show years ago about Pandoc, I'm sure you did. Or maybe it was actually on his own website, I'm not sure, his own show. But Pandoc, is that a conversion that converts from one format to another?
Yeah. It's amazing. It's a really clever piece of code. It's got better over the years. So yeah, you can actually feed it HTML and it will generate Markdown. Did you hear that, by the way? Did that come through? Do you hear a cuckoo?
Yeah, I did.
You know what that is?
That cuckoo.
Yeah, no. What it is, I forgot to switch it off. There's a show just been submitted message. So I'm on my laptop here because I couldn't get Mumble to work on my main PC. The main PC just spotted that a new HBR show arrived, and that's it alerting me to go and do stuff with it.
Woohoo!
So yeah, it's fun here. Oh, it's all go.
Oh, excellent! Very good, very good. So that's good. That's maybe your eye opener. I'll bear that in mind, that from now on, you know, the one that's going to cause less of an issue as I use Markdown. So, and particularly to highlight URLs and whatnot, so that this makes it less likely to go wrong ways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. One of the issues that we haven't fully resolved yet, although we're working on it, is when people want to send in pictures. I've always been keen that there should be a way that people can do that, because you take Tony Hughes's stuff recently where he was sending in pictures of his model cars that he's been refurbishing and stuff. I thought it was, yeah, I'd like to see that sort of thing happening to some extent. You know, it just makes it, to my mind, makes sure more interesting. So, but sending them in and putting them in the right place and knowing where the actual file is going to be when it's on the server, all that sort of stuff gets really complicated. So we definitely need to make a simple path to achieve that and document it properly, which we're working on, yeah. But it's a little way off.
Yeah, it sounds an absolute nightmare. I mean, I don't know, how could you automate pasting it into the correct location? That would be the, unless you could just append it to the very end and just say, you know, refer to picture one, picture two, picture three. And it's not ideal, but it would make it much easier to deal with this, you know, from an automation point of view, I thought. You know?
Yes. Some people do manage to do it, because we do have some bare information about how that works, but Tony, for example, just puts in a little sort of comment that says picture one here please, picture two here, and that type of thing. So I've just got little bin macros that will do the necessary. It's a little bit of a challenge from my end.
Yeah, unless you could supply a template or something like that, download this template and put your own text in the right bits. Maybe that would be the one way of doing it, maybe.
It's a thought, yeah. I'll have a wee think about that. I actually use a template myself when I'm preparing a show. But templates that I write for myself are not things I would want to give to anybody else, but the principle is a good one.
Yeah, so shall we move on to your number two then?
All right. I just wanted to flag up the fact that for several years now, we've had a thing called the Podcrawl Glasgow, or sometimes Glasgow Podcrawl. I don't know which way around we like to do that. But that was planned for the 1st of August this year, but of course it couldn't happen. But we managed to organise an equivalent thing using Jitsi, and so we had a get together by Jitsi on that evening, and it was really good because the many of the people who've actually been to these things in person were there, but there was also people who'd said, "Oh, I wish I could have joined you," but they had a long haul to get to. So we had Lainey, who often is involved with some of the stuff that the Other Side Network does. She's in Yorkshire, I think. Then we had Klaatu from New Zealand, somewhere in the middle of the night or early morning he was. We had Chalkalom, who does appear occasionally in HBR things. He's not actually an HBR host, we must get that sorted. And he's in Hungary. And we had another one of the Other Side Network people, Chris, who was in Canada. So we had 10 people joining in to this thing. And that was really good. It was great.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. I don't know. I seem to be busier than ever these days. So, you mentioned this before. Does it do video or is it just audio? What is Jitsi?
No, it's a video. Video system, a bit like Zoom. I never used Zoom, so I can't really say much about it. But it allowed us to, what you do is you create effectively a room on the Jitsi server. Now, it seems to be a free service at the moment, and you can then advertise the URL of that server to people who might want to join in, and they can just join in with a web client, with a web server to that address. And with client, why did I say web server? And they can just join in. I mean, I just connected to it, and with my microphone headphone setup as I have now for Mumble, and obviously my camera on my laptop, and it worked just great. There was an array of matrix of videos of people doing stuff, sitting in front of their computers or whatever, and we were able to wave at one another and chat and so forth. It was really good.
Very good, very good. Yeah, I mean, that's you mentioned the Jessica before, and I managed to actually purloin my get back my webcam from my mother, so I now have it, and okay. It does actually work. To my amazement, I couldn't believe it actually works. so maybe one day we can have a go in Jitsi, I suppose.
Yeah. That would be just the. I think people are doing things like running Jitsi with an Audacity running in the background recording stuff, because Jitsi doesn't have a recording capability, as far as I understand it. But so that you'd get, I'm not sure, you must be able to record something, or maybe you just get you could just make an audio thing, but you could see the others as you did it. I think Zoom might have a bit more capability. I'm no expert on this, so I shouldn't say more than I know.
Yeah. I was wondering if I should maybe just leave that. I've got push to talk enabled, but I've actually got it toggled. Because I don't suppose you're not going to get feedback or anything, so I don't suppose it really matters if I push it or don't push it or whatever. But so because you can do full duplex, I'm guessing, on this, can't you? Obviously,
I think so. Yeah. Some people do run it that way. Yeah. So yeah, quite sophisticated.
Yeah. Very good. So yeah, so you had a good time then. That's nice. Yeah, that's a bit. I think, is anyone open to that, were they?
It was open to all, but we, I think the organisers didn't make the address available until just a short time before the actual start time. So, yeah. There's one thing I should say, actually. This has been a thing that Kevi from TouchJam podcast has tended to organize in real life, and he was certainly one of the movers on this Jitsi one, and he just had a motorbike accident on Thursday, so just to say, yeah. If anybody knows him, listens to him, he's out of hospital now, but he broke both arms coming off his motorbike, so he's in a bit of a quandary for a few weeks, I think. So
not good.
I must admit, there was a time when I retired, I thought it'd be great to get back on a motorbike again. I used to ride one quite a lot, but I used to, as a student, I used to commute from Norwich, where my parents were, to Manchester, which is a fair old journey on a not very large motorbike, but I was really fancying getting back on one, but I'm really glad I haven't, because I'd probably have killed myself.
I'm sure I heard statistics, of course, that people later on in life sort of get back into motorbikes, sort of thing, and there's quite a number of that happening to you, I believe. So it's difficult, isn't it? Because I mean, I don't have a license for a motorbike, but I have off-road bike, or whatever, and it is wonderful, you know. And on holiday, I drove mopeds. So yeah, it's a great feeling, I must admit.
It is a lovely way to travel on a good day, whatever. But it's pretty weather dependent. I think Kevi just lost the back end of his bike, lost adhesion, and he was off the road. It wasn't a collision or anything. So, I haven't got the full details, so I shouldn't say too much. He'll doubtless tell us all. But he's communicating via Telegram and stuff, so he's not too downcast. He's a cheery fella. So I just thought I'd share that because people might be aware, might want to be aware that he's not been too good.
Yeah. Excellent. Good stuff. So shall we move on to the next topic or?
Mm-hmm.
So my second one, well, this description, wasn't it? You know, the thing is, I mentioned before, but I find it difficult to get a chance to do things like that these days. And of course, if you're not using something, you quickly lose it. You know, if you don't use it all the time, it does tend to go. And I'm kind of quite rusty now with writing Bash scripts or whatever, or something. So it's Bash or maybe Python is a sort of two things that I've played with in the past. So I was working on a script that the idea was that I there's some video files that I sometimes convert to a different format, and it takes, on my aging ancient old PC, it takes quite a long time. So I thought it'd be good to know how long is it going to take to convert, you know, this video file from, hang on just a wee second, I thought this bit tablet's going to go asleep there. So I wonder how long it takes to convert, you see, because obviously you leave the PC alone and you think, well, I get it done before I go to bed, sort of thing. So that sort of thing.
Yes.
And yeah. I thought, well, it must be quite easy to find out the first thing, how the duration of a video file. And even that was a wee bit tricky. So I pulled together a script which, so what it does is for each file, first of all, it looks for files that are no older than, hang on, was it? Let me just see. It basically starts using a find command. And it says, okay, so it says, you know, files that are no older than 14 days, ending in MP4, print the date and file name, followed by duration. So it uses a thing called FFprobe to get the duration of the file. So you get the date, you get the file name, the duration of the file, and then in the second line, the conversion time. And it uses what's that thing called now for doing floating point BC, that's how I use BC.
Yeah, right, yeah. I was just gonna say that.
That's it, yeah, BC. So but it ended up with what do you call it? Subshells. Oh, it's a complete spaghetti. I got the name, but so that took way longer than I expected, but it was fun to do it, and it's probably months since I've done any coding. So what sort of things have you been working on, Dave?
I tend to be poking around with scripts all the time. I'm terrible at this sort of, well, yeah, it's in my job. I started out as a programmer, and then I became a sort of manager and did less of the stuff, and so I really missed the scripting and programming and stuff. So now I'm retired, I tend to do more and more of it. So I'm terrible at fiddling around with this sort of stuff. So yeah, I let me tell you about one thing, and actually might make a HBR show about this one. I don't know if it's going to be of interest to people, but my kids don't live with me these days, but we have a sort of family get together every Wednesday, Thursday, and I cook for them. So what I do is make a big batch of something and we eat it on two nights. And they're vegetarian, my son and his girlfriend are. My daughter is sort of 90% vegetarian. So limits the number of things I can cook for them. So what I've done is I've got a database containing the various meals that we've tried and liked, and then I wrote a script which will select the next one for the coming Wednesday, and it'll do it randomly. But it has to be a little bit more than just random, because you don't want to be getting the ratatouille twice in succession. So each meal has got a meal type, whatever, has got a repetition time associated with it. So don't bring this back up again until so many days have passed. So and some of them have got long repetitions because they're not that popular. Some of them have got short repetitions. Strangely, haggis, neeps, and tatties, using the vegetarian haggis, is a rapid repetition one. They never complain when that one comes back up again. So I run this thing and then send them a message saying, right, the next Wednesday's meal will be blah blah blah, and it gives me a chance to if I do it a few days beforehand to do the appropriate shopping to get all the necessary. So I've been developing this particular script and making it more efficient and it's a bells and whistles. I'm not one for GUI applications. This one is a command line thing. So, but it does colored text and stuff. Just my concession to GUI things.
That's an excellent show. That, you know, that sounds fun, really. Yeah, very useful too, actually.
Well, it's surprising, you know. There's almost like a sort of betting game going on. Oh, I wonder what it's going to be this week. Oh, yeah. Do you think it will be such and such? No. I hope it's not that. Or, you know. So, when are we going to have that such and such again? You know, it's fun stuff.
It's in the hands of the computer.
Oh, it's something to do with me. Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking
I was going to make it more generalized and then put it up on GitHub, but I haven't got that far yet.
Yeah. Funny enough, you talk about vegetarian, but my wife just recently got a book, and it's really taken to that sort of thing, and it's about how what impacts what you eat can have on your whole body and your mind and all that sort of thing, you know. I haven't read it myself, but she's been cooking many more vegetarian dishes. So I mean, we're not vegetarians by any means, but last few weeks now, I reckon maybe 80% of the time we've been eating vegetarian meals, something like that. Maybe more than that, in fact. Mm-hmm. But it's very good. I'm enjoying it, I must admit, more than I thought I would. So yeah.
Yeah, it's surprising how good some of these things can be if you're not really into the vegetarian stuff. I get asked every Christmas to make what tends to be called a nut roast. I think if you look in the recipe books, they tend not to use that, because that was used as a sort of pejorative joking term for what vegetarians eat, but it's basically ground up nuts made into a shape with all sorts of other things in it, like mushrooms and, you know, quite a lot of flavorings and stuff with it. And you bake it and then get slices of it, which you eat as if it's meat with roast potatoes and veggies and all that sort of stuff as per Christmas. So that's been remarkably popular. Yeah, that's a favourite. It only gets done at Christmas. It's quite laborious. So.
Yes. very good. Excellent. Yeah, so there we go. It's that's quite interesting. Hi,
this is Dave here. We decided to cut our conversation into two pieces, so we're going to stop at this point and resume in a later episode. So thanks for listening. See you later. Bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.